We are joined now by Brian Smoller. He is with us to talk K-State Athletics. Brian is the Director of Video Services at K-State High Def TV at K-State Athletics, and of course the voice of Kent State Women's Basketball, fill-in voice for the men, and you probably hear him many times at football games there at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. And Brian is with us live from Fort Worth, Texas. That's right, Brian, you're covering the women tomorrow, right?
That's right. We've been on, we've been out this whole week. We went to West Virginia on Wednesday night and then stayed out on the road. And just to save legs this time of year and save one additional flight, headed back home and then back up down to Fort Worth. So just flew straight from Morgantown to Fort Worth, Texas, and getting ready for tomorrow afternoon's game against the Horned Frogs.
All right, so let's talk about the women first, since you're covering them tomorrow. The K-State women, certainly a team that should be in the NCAA tournament right now, fourth place in the Big 12 standings, 8-6. They're 18-8 overall, and certainly they've had some struggles winning on the road, but then again, in the Big 12, most teams struggle to win on the road unless your name is Baylor or Texas.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Oklahoma's had a pretty good year of surviving on the road. The Sooners would be the only other team that has had a winning road record in league play this season, and a lot of their games have come down to the last second, and they've just been able to either get a last-second shot or find a way to survive. I would say the opposite has been the case for K-State. Well, the Wildcats, they have two games that they've lost this year in conference play to Baylor, but the other four losses are all on the road, and they're all by an average of 5 points. So in each of those games, at Iowa State, at Texas, at West Virginia here just recently, the Wildcats, it's come down to a final possession, and the Wildcats just has been unable to find a way to get things done, or within the last 2 minutes of the game have been within a possession and have been able to close the deal. The other game, of course, is at Oklahoma, where K-State led by 3 points with 20 seconds left, and Oklahoma hit a three-pointer at the buzzer to send it to overtime and eventually beat K-State.
The K-State women, when we were talking earlier this year, I was talking with Cody when we were down at the Virgin Islands talking about what do we think. We were talking back and forth about how what the record would be for the K-State women, thinking about their schedule, what their conference record would be, and Cody and I, consensus was, 10-8 would be pretty good. Maybe they can get to 11-7. Right now, they're 8-6, and you look at the upcoming games at TCU tomorrow, certainly a winnable game. They beat TCU earlier in the year, the K-State women did. Then they host number 19, Oklahoma, as you mentioned, could have easily won that one on the road earlier in the year. At Kansas, that's a game that they should win. And then hosting number 8, Texas, and I know Texas has had a great year undefeated in the Big 12, but K-State nearly beat them on the road as well. So when you look at the landscape of the Big 12, K-State women, certainly it's not inconceivable that they could win the last four games and finish 12-6, but if they ended 11-7, that'd still be a heck of a year in the Big 12.
I would agree with that. Real-time RPI, for what it's worth, puts K-State as a favorite in all four of those games. I'm with you. I think it's there may be still some question as to whether that actually happens. And, TCU tomorrow is one of the highest scoring offenses in the league. They've had struggles on defense, but they're a great 3-point shooting team. And going against a team that in K-State that largely likes to play a lot of matchup zone, 3-point shooting teams can cause some problems. And then Oklahoma has, as I said before, has found a way to win all season long, even when the chips are down. And Texas is playing as well as anybody in the country. They just went to Florida State, top 10 team, and knocked them off in Tallahassee. So very, very good. And then, of course, KU's the rivalry game. You never really know what's going to happen going over there. And they've got two very good scorers in Jessica Washington and Calvert, young girl. But, I don't know. I'm with double-figure wins in this league. Anytime you get to that number, you're doing things right.
Absolutely.
You're going to earn not only a first day bye in the Big 12 tournament, but you're probably going to be sitting in a pretty good seat for the NCAA tournament. Really, the goal is to try and avoid being lumped into an 8 or 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. For years, the Big 12 conference has just beaten up on each other during the regular season, and the teams that finish 3rd through 6th in the standings will get put into the NCAA tournament as an 8 or a 9 seed. And that's a death knell for women's basketball, because if you win their first round game, as K-State did last year, as a 9 seed, well, then you get a number 1 seed. And as we all know, in women's basketball, the number 1 seed, usually the top 4 teams, are on a different level, different planet athletically than everybody else. And playing a UConn or a South Carolina or even a Baylor in that second game of the tournament aren't many teams pulling that upset off.
Had somebody ask me this the other day, and Brian Smoller is with us, Director of Video Services, the voice of the K-State women's basketball team, as they will be at TCU tomorrow. We'll talk men's hoops coming up here in just a minute or two. And the person asked me, they said, is this, you know, they knew that there's a couple of key players for the K-State women that'll graduate. Certainly Bree Lewis had a wonderful career, Kindred Wiesman as well. And I said, I don't think this is some flash in the pan couple of year thing. I know Coach Minnie and staff really feel good about the recruiting class and the kids that are coming in next year. And they've got some really nice recruits that certainly have to mature and develop. And that's part of the whole process. You recruit, and now you got to coach them.
Yeah, you know, and much of the comeback for K-State against West Virginia on Wednesday night, the Wildcats got down 19 in that game and came all the way back to get within 2 points by early part of the fourth quarter. A large part of that comeback was done with three freshmen and the sophomore on the court. So they feel pretty good about this young core that they have right now, and that's not including what you just referenced, the number 26 ranked recruiting class they have coming in, and they feel pretty good about who they have targeted for the year after that. So I think Jeff Biddy and his staff have done a wonderful job. J.C. Capra, Ebony Gillum, who are the lead recruiters for this team, have done a wonderful job of being able to put together a roster that fits what they want to do defensively, which is long and fast, and be able to hit the post and be athletic and defend, but also hit shots. And I'm excited about the future. I'm with you. I don't think this is a case where you're just seeing the end of an era with Bree Lewis and Kindred Wiesman that we'll see the team kind of go through a rebuilding mode. I think they'll continue to take steps forward here in the next year or two. They'll be very young, certainly, in next year, more young than they've been, but there will be as much talent as if they've ever had across the board.
Let's shift gears to the men's basketball team. You mentioned the women have had a lot of close losses on the road to K-State, much like last year. A lot of close games again this year. They've been able to close out a couple of those, and they've lost six of their last seven, and the win sandwiched in between all those losses was a really good win on the road at number 2 Baylor at the time. They have a couple of good marquee wins, West Virginia at home, on the road at Baylor. They played Kansas tough a couple of times, but they've lost three straight home games. They've fallen behind early, two of the last three home games against teams that they probably should have beaten at home. I know DJ Johnson's hobbled with the ankle, but you can't change what's happened in the past. And K-State now is in a situation where they have to be, I would think, firmly on the bubble, if not just off of it. 16-10 overall, 5-8 in the Big 12. But they've got winnable games coming up. And I was talking with Dusty about this the other day, Brian, is that you could argue that K-State could easily win four of these five games. They'll be just fine. They go 9-9 in the Big 12. They get into the tournament. And that might be enough to save Coach Weber's job, or maybe he doesn't need to make the tournament to save his job. We don't know that for sure. That's all speculation. But it wouldn't surprise anybody either, the way this team is going, that they could lose two or three or four of those remaining five games. Talk about how this season's gone for K-State, because it certainly has felt like it's been a roller coaster ride.
You know, I did the game in New York when they played Maryland, and for 38, 39 minutes and 30 seconds of that game, they looked like a top 20 team. Just incredible performance. DJ Johnson was a monster inside. Cam Stokes outplayed the star guard for Maryland. It was just it was fun to watch. And then in the span of about 30 seconds there at the end of the game, they blew a 5-point lead with some really silly mistakes. And who knew then that would be the an omen of what would be, unfortunately, the downfall for this team, which is just very poor basketball IQ decisions late in games. You know, how much of that is coaching? How much of it is just players in themselves, the leaders, whatever, not making right decisions? I don't know. Probably fault on all sides. The team is to the point now where, yeah, you're right, you don't really know game to game what's going to happen and who's going to step up and play. I do know at the beginning of the year, the concern for this team was injuries. That it because they had a starting five that was as good as anybody in the league, but not much behind it, there was always the question of what happens if somebody goes down.
Yeah.
And with DJ being out, I think you see that they just do not have the same punch and energy effort that they've had before. So that's a factor. I wouldn't say it's an excuse, but I'd say it's a factor. And as for what they need to do, I do, being on the women's side and having done the men a number of times, and you keep following them and stay up to date with them, I will say it's a little bit easier to pull back from to the big picture and say, life as a bubble team, this is kind of what it's like for all the other bubble teams across America, mm-hmm. right? I mean, what's we heard all the time during the Chiefs season that everybody thinks their own team is terrible and that they're the worst possible team that has that record, right? I mean,
right.
If you go across the country and talk to other bubble basketball teams, it's going to be largely a resume like K-State's. Some games where they won tremendous contests, the Baylor West Virginia wins, and other games that they've lost that they really shouldn't lose. And that's life on the bubble. And that's life on being a lower seed in the NCAA tournament field. And for K-State, it's largely been like that, life like that, since Bob Huggins arrived. Outside of the 1 year where K-State made a run with Frank Martin to the Elite Eight. So in some respects, this isn't new. It shouldn't be new. It's nice to be in the conversation for postseason as opposed to the last 2 years. I think K-State will still make it to the NCAA tournament, but you know, Iowa State, TCU are also going to be in that field of 64. And in some respects, yes, they should have won those games, but those aren't terrible teams. K-State has no bad losses, I guess is what I'm trying to say. There are bad losses in the view of us as K-State fans, certainly because hey, if you can beat West Virginia at home, you should be able to beat anybody at home, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And I think that's where people get frustrated. I totally get it. But Iowa State and TCU are also pretty good basketball teams.
I think there's a scenario, and I don't know what the odds are, but the landscape of college basketball, and you mentioned the bubble. The bubble is not as strong as it's been in previous years. Some of the mid-majors, like a Missouri Valley Conference, might be a one-bid league instead of getting two. And then that extra bid more than likely is going to go to a Power 5 conference, which could be the Big 12. A lot of people say the Big 12 is going to get seven teams in. Well, if that's the case right now, K-State's eighth in the Big 12. And I know they look at the whole resume. But you look at the remaining schedule, I think you can make an argument that as long as K-State wins the right games in this final five-game stretch, they could win 3 out of 5 and still maybe somehow get in the tournament with an 8-10 conference record because of that weakness on the bubble. But you can't afford to lose at Texas this weekend. You can't lose at Oklahoma. Teams are at the bottom of the Big 12. Could you lose at home against Oklahoma State and still get in? I'd say yeah, because you did beat Oklahoma State on the road. But then you sit here and go, where's that second loss you're allowed? Well, if you lose at TCU, TCU could be competing for that same spot in the tournament from your league, and you got swept by TCU. If you lose to Texas Tech, you're in the same boat again where they sweep you. So it's kind of a tedious situation because you look at the rest of the schedule, it doesn't look super tough. But at the same time, I think you and me and many K-State fans out there would say, we just don't know which team's going to show up.
Yeah, and the hard part is because you lost the games to Iowa State and TCU, you have no wiggle room.
Yeah.
And that's really the damning part of those losses. It's not so much that you lost to a team that may be better than you. I mean, Iowa State goes into Lawrence and wins, so they obviously can go on the road and beat teams. So it's not so much that you lost that game. It's more of the opportunities to put a pelt in the belt, so to speak, are disappearing very quickly. So now you're getting into games like you just rattled off, games that you pretty much have to win, going to Texas and going other places, and you have to win. Well, Texas has shown the ability to rise up and play pretty well at home at times this year in the Shaka Smart. That's no gimme, especially not for K-State. But now you've put yourself in a position where you pretty much have to win it. And the same with the remaining games you mentioned, going to Oklahoma, which may be easier now that Woodard's out for the year with an ACL. But Oklahoma State coming in Manhattan, that's going to be a nutty game. The Cowboys are playing as good as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And another factor the committee looks at as well is how you play down the stretch.
Yep.
That's also a part of that. If you continue to drop games and you're already in the swoon at the moment, if you can't rectify that and show that you're at least building momentum heading into the Big 12 tournament, then it will work against you a little bit. So there are a lot of big things on the line coming up this weekend, and it starts with what is as close to a must-win as there is going to Texas. Now, if they lose the game to Texas, as you said, by record, it's not a killer. You know, they could still win 3 of the next 4 to finish out with a 3-2 record, and by record and because of a soft bubble, still get in. But, boy, you're just eliminating more chances and hurting yourself for marquee wins and bad losses, so to speak, avoiding the bad losses.
Do you think, and certainly we were talking about this earlier, that to me, Bruce Weber's been on the hot seat the very first day he slid in to be the head coach at Kansas State, at least to some K-State fans. And some people haven't really given him a chance, and others have. And there's been certainly unrest with Bruce Weber and the K-State fan base for a while now. But your opinion, do you believe that Bruce Weber, I know you're not John Curry, but do you believe that Bruce Weber, in order to keep his job, needs to make the NCAA tournament this year? Or would the NIT be good enough?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, and I'm not trying to dodge it. I don't know. I don't know the goalposts, so to speak, that have been set by John Curry for Bruce Weber. I have no idea. I will say that if you miss the postseason three straight years in a row at any Power 5 school, coaches have been fired for less. I think we just saw that at NC State. The rumors of Thad Matta at Ohio State. And the guy's, what, 2 years removed from a Final Four? And they're talking about removing him as a head coach. So, you know, I'm biased, clearly, towards Coach Weber, knowing him and working with him and seeing firsthand what was there and seeing the team with Frank Martin before that as well. I think, while a different approach with Bruce Weber, the way he coaches basketball, the biggest question when he arrived at K-State was recruiting. Remember, everyone was upset about Bruce Weber and labeled him as a guy, well, he can coach, but he can't recruit. Well, I think he answered that question clearly. K-State's individual talent across the board is as good as it's been in some time. Even in the days of Michael Beasley, Bill Walker, K-State wasn't fielding five guys with as much talent individually as this team has. So, and then the ability to win a conference championship in his first year, in some respects, validated the hire. Now, what's happened since then can't happen. And I think he knows that. I think the staff knows that. The team knows that, which is why they keep talking about, hey, it's not the coaches, it's us, and trying to take one themselves and take that bullet. You know, as an employee of the athletic department, someone that works with the basketball team, I hope they can make the postseason. As a Wildcat, as a K-Stater, I never want to root against my school nor my team and want them to fail, both for the kids and for the state of the program, so that my own personal agenda of a coach, if I didn't like a coach, could be replaced. I think that's short-sighted. I think that's pretty selfish. So I hope they do it. I hope they get turned around. I hope they get into the postseason. And this is just a blip on the radar of a longer storyline of Bruce Weber and his long success at K-State. But to answer your question, if they don't make the tournament and it's three straight years without postseason play, I don't think that will happen. But if that did happen, I could see a scenario where Coach Weber would be removed. I just don't. Only from the standpoint of, there aren't many Power 5 schools that would allow, especially ones that care about basketball like K-State, to allow someone to stay there for three straight years without some serious extenuating circumstances, severe injuries, whatever.
You know, big part of coaching, of course, as we know, X's and O's is part of it. Recruiting is part of it. But once you get the recruits to your school, you have to coach them up. And I think that's the thing that some K-State fans have been asking. I've been asking the same thing. And that is, you know, if recruiting's been better, if you've done a nice job in that area, and I think you laid it out pretty well, but then there's the, you know, Dean Wade would be a good example of a guy that's only a sophomore. And we had Wyatt on earlier this year, and he said, you know, a lot of people expect Dean Wade to be, you know, 20 points a night and Mr. Consistency. Well, Jacob Pullen was not Mr. Consistent when he was a sophomore. He grew, he matured, and he got better. But you mentioned the lack of depth because of the injury of the DJ, and we knew all year along that if him or Stokes or somebody gets hurt, K-State's going to be in some trouble. Is that part of the bigger issue for K-State is that, okay, you've got a good five, but you don't have that depth, but you really can't blame anybody outside of the program themselves in regards to not having the depth, because that comes down to recruiting. And if it comes about development, players aren't getting better or not becoming more consistent. Once again, people from the outside could easily say, well, that's what the coaches are paid to do, is to improve those recruits that they bring in.
Yeah, there are valid points there. But I will say that DJ Johnson was a pretty raw basketball player when he got here.
Yeah.
And to see his improvement over 4 years is, and with a significant amount of time missed because of an injury, would speak to the coaching level of this group. Dean Wade, we're only into year two. I agree with Wyatt. I think the expectation level, largely because he is from Kansas, he had such a good start as a freshman, have overwhelmed him a little bit. And they work with him much more. That's the thing. We as fans don't even get to see how much time Coach Weber and the staff work with these guys one-on-one. Yep. They meet with them. They talk with them. It's psychology. In addition to your on-the-court talents and skill set and getting in the gym and getting up shots, Barry Brown, the guy that lives in the gym and works hard, perhaps works too hard at it at times. There is no doubt that the depth of this team, I think, was taken down because of what happened with Marcus Foster and that group and that team. When that cycle went through, and yes, this could be an indictment on the coaches as well, but as for a reason why the depth is what it is, I believe that that caused a swirling of events where you had guys that had to be asked to leave that all of a sudden were supposed to be here in their junior and senior years. And while you can fill those spots, and K-State did with guys like Barry Brown and Xavier Sneed and others, well, now they're much younger players and raw and not yet there. And as much as we'd love to see impact freshmen come in and play right away, there aren't many that come in at K-State historically that have been to the talent level of a Xavier Sneed or someone that can contribute right away like Cam Stokes and Barry Brown did when they were freshmen, or even Wesley Wundu for that matter. Mm-hmm. So the depth is of a concern a little bit. I think what's more concerning are the guys that have left, and that needs to change. And that what also needs to change is guys that are here like James Love, Isaiah Maurice, Brian Patrick, those guys need to get better. They need to show some level of improvement. And it's hard to see that right now because they don't play very much. So they may be getting better in practice, but we don't see it much translating into game action. And whether that's because of a feel of a need to play the guy, you have to win the game, so we're trying to play guys that are more experienced and better talent. I'm putting my best seven out on the court and win. I don't know. I will point, K-State and KU are on a different level in basketball, but I would point out that the Jayhawks play with only seven.
Yep.
So the small rotation's not unheard of, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say for K-State. If you have guys that you feel comfortable with for seven, then you run with seven and you should be all right. When you get injuries or foul troubles, when you get to have a problem, and it's bitten both teams, I would think, K-State and KU this year.
Brian Smothers, our guest on the Sports Ticket. A couple more questions for Brian. I'm going to turn our attention to football. A couple of big stories coming out for K-State, of course. One, Coach Snyder, throat cancer. He addressed that, but can you add anything to that?
Not a whole lot, other than, we didn't know much about that either. We were as taken aback by the report that came out, as I'm sure many fans were as well. Thoughts and prayers, obviously, with Coach Snyder. It sounds like it'll be a full recovery and not something that will slow him down much, if at all, and all systems moving forward. I think they're pretty excited about what's coming back for this next year and to see how it all plays out with the new coaches on staff, including Colin Klein, which I'm sure is what you're going to ask about next, right?
Yes, just go ahead. Save me time.
Well, him being on staff is great. You know, we saw Colin and Shaylin in December up in Northern Iowa when his basketball played up there, and they came to the game and visited with them. Just great people. And Shaylin, of course, a former women's basketball player who's helped us out on radio and TV in times past. And so it's great to have them back. I think it'll be a great addition. Obviously, his ability as a coach is very, very good. It's not just, hey, we're hiring a name, so to speak, for recruiting and just go recruit. And he really can coach. He knows the game. Quarterbacks love him. I think it's a great fit for what K-State's got going in the future.
You and I think, experienced a first in different ways. For you, and I talked with you about this earlier this week, that I saw that you were interviewed in a car, while a car was actually being driven, you were interviewed. And for me, I had a first last week as well, and that was I was able to interview my first ever official mascot. And people say, well, how could you do that? Mascots aren't supposed to talk. Well, I I ended up interviewing the guy who's KC Wolf, also known as Dan Mears, or should I say Dan Mears, also known as KC Wolf. So that was interesting. I would imagine that was a little bit interesting in regards to the interview in the car. What's next? Interview on the plane? Interview when you're skydiving? What's next for you?
Well, certainly wouldn't be skydiving. I'm not too big on a fan of heights, but in a plane, maybe. But, you know, we try to do some stuff in a plane before. It's just the noise. It's just too loud, the engines and stuff. It's funny you say that because going back to Coach Snyder, the famous story that we hear from one of our video guys, Norm Burge, on our staff, who's been around since Coach Snyder first got here, he tells the story of one of the first 2 years that Coach Snyder arrived at K-State. We always taped Coach Snyder's TV show, his football show, after the football game, home or away. We tape it once we get back, landing from Waco or wherever, and we go over to on campus to the studio and we film his show. So one of the ways he wanted to save time, he asked if we could film it on the plane as we came back home from the game, and it took some time to try and explain to him, there's no way that you could make that look good. There's, you know, with everybody in the background just in rows in the airplane seats, number one. Number two, the sound, it would sound like you're on an airplane.
Yeah.
So we had to mix the idea and talk him down out of that. But I don't think we'll be doing any interviews on a plane anytime soon.
All right, time for off-the-wall question before we let you go. I mentioned the mascot thing. What's your favorite mascot? And you can't count Willie. All right, it's got to be somebody that you're maybe not associated with. What's your what do you think's the coolest, unique, oddest, whatever way you want to interpret a mascot out there?
Boy, that's a tough one. I will deflect a little bit and say this. I went a number of years ago. We were in Oklahoma City for a women's basketball Big 12 tournament, and the Thunder were playing, and we went to the Thunder game, and at halftime, they had a mascot Royal Rumble.
Yes.
And they brought out a wrestling mat with ropes in the whole nine yards, and they probably had 20 different mascots out there beating the ever-living you-know-what out of each other. And it was the funniest thing I had ever seen, and one of the greatest moments was when they all decided to gang up and beat up Barney, who was out there, and including a couple of kicks to the groin that just sent Barney face planting to the ground. And I swear, I had tears running down my face. It was the funniest thing I had ever seen in my life. So I will say that anytime anybody brings up mascots, that's what I think of immediately is Naveen Bobana was the SID at the time, and he and I watched that, and it'll be a memory for a lifetime.
Oh, my kids, my oldest, he just loved Barney for about a 3-month spell when he was little, and I had to see this over and over, so I really get a kick out of you just sharing that story with what happens at Barney, man.
I don't know if there's video anywhere, but to see all these NBA mascots gang up on him was priceless. The crowd loved it.
And you certainly loved it as well. Hey, man, we always appreciate the time here on the Sports Ticket. Have a great call tomorrow, K-State at TCU, and keep up the great work, man.
You too, Wade. Talk to you later.
That's Brian Smoller. He's our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill and Downs.